Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, y'all? That's Chuck D. As you know, I'm your boy, Eric, or Citizen Payne, as some people know you. This is Kay's son and friends, formerly Kay Thompson Live, and I know my mother's somewhere happy that they got one of her sorors as the first African-American female, Asian-American female to head a national ticket to be on a national elected office, let's just say it, vice presidential. She's nominated for the vice president of the Democratic Party's nomination, Kamala Harris. And history has been made. There you go.
Once again.
Excuse me, my friend. I dropped the phone a little bit. History has been made. And I don't know about y'all, but I think that at the end of the day, when you look at it, Kamala was the best choice. She checks most of the boxes that we can think about. She certainly is more than qualified to hold that position, as a lot of the other women were who were in the running. And she brings the heat, you know, that combination of popularity and energy that the Biden campaign could use, and an influx of energy, certainly. Obviously, the age thing being a situation, and Kamala's bringing all that. You know, I've learned a long time ago, and maybe a lot of you have in your observations, depending on how long or how astute you are, even if you might be a little bit younger, how observant you are is what I'm getting at, that politics, like any contest, is a certain degree of popularity into it, right? Even in athletic events, the more popular teams are the ones that are more watched. People want to see them. So there's amount of popularity in everything. And certainly in politics, there's popularity. It's a popularity contest, meaning the more popular the person is, the more people are aware of them, and the more there's a possibility that that awareness might fall in the category of favorability, if you know what I'm saying. So more well-known somebody is, to be in pop culture, to be the person, the flavor of the minute. If you could take that, if you could take that and flip it up, you get to be president. Look at Barack Obama. Not to say he, too, was very overly qualified for the position, but that's how Donald Trump got to be president, right? His popularity. He was a TV star who talked a lot of stuff, had this make-believe whole businessman myth about him, some brilliant businessman myth that he cultivated and made up for the last 50, 60 years of his life, which we call, come to find out that Donnie's not the man. He's not the man. I got a little bit that I do. Like, everybody thought he was the man, and come to find out he's not the man. You're not the man, Donnie. So, but you know who is for real with her stuff? Kamala. Kamala ain't no joke. And a lot of people thought she was, me included, a little bit overly aggressive in her pursuit. But, you know, in my state, it's been said that politics is a contact sport. And I know in certain other states that that can be said as well. And also, you know, you got to give it up to a woman that is making inroads and breaking barriers in an area that's been dominated by men. And in a lot of circumstances by very negative and men that would stand in their way. So I voted for Kamala Harris just on the strength when she was running for attorney general when I lived in California. And now that's before I knew that she was an HBCU. She went to Howard. That's okay. We'll allow that. But that's HBCU strength, and that's how we're rolling. And all of us, I'm pretty sure, are going to be coming out for this ticket. And so it is with great pleasure today that we congratulate, talk about the candidacy of the first African-American woman on a national ticket. And I got to talk about a long time ago when my uncle was first, my uncle and my dad first, you know, were putting together his campaign to run for Congress. We were able to get the great, the one and only Shirley Chisholm to come all the way to Jersey to do the initial fundraiser for a guy named Don Payne Jr., Don Payne Sr., who was trying to run for Congress. And I didn't really realize, as I was about fairly young, the full impact of Mrs. Chisholm. I just knew, as many of you know about us, that my father and mother, you know, they schooled us, bringing us up about who were these great black heroes of ours, Shirley Chisholm certainly being one. And if you grew up in this New York City area, you knew who Shirley Chisholm was. That's a bad black lady. And she was at, came to my house back in the early 70s, mid-70s, to campaign for my uncle. And it was an honor to meet the great Shirley Chisholm. So this is in homage to her. The first, I think she might have been, and this is going to be something that when I bring Byron in, he's going to confirm this for me, and I'm sure Wayne can confirm it as well, if you could call back, Wayne, that she was the first black person to run for president, I think, if that's not mistaken, maybe in modern day, to declare that she was running for president. So with great pleasure, we are going to start this conversation. I'm trying to get a couple of maybe female elected officials. I know it's short notice. I know our friend Donald Wilson, friend of the show, was busy this evening, but we're going to do a show where we get the female, the women in here, and certainly, you know, you can't have this discussion with them without them, actually. But let's go to the fellas. Byron Saunders, my brother, what's happening tonight? What's going on, Byron?
Grace and peace, my brother. What's going on tonight? When you pray for change and a miracle, recognize it when it happens. Because this moment that happened yesterday was the lift that we were looking for, not just because it was an African-American choice. There were several great choices. And out of my wish list, Kamala was number two.
Right.
My first choice was, as you remember, Susan Rice. And my third choice was the Stacey Abrams, all of which would have made great choices, including the other two African-American women in the race for VP, also would have been quality candidates. But this is the moment where you can look back in history and say, when did the change happen? Go back to that moment, Eric, when you realized that President Barack Hussein Obama was going to really win. Think about that. In your lifetime, my lifetime, did you ever think we would see an African-American president? It was
no, I didn't, for real, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, it's a phenomenal moment. And here we are at that one-again moment. And I'm going to say this, Black Girl Magic, Democratic Party, is about to unleash what I consider will be a tsunami of blue votes. And they better be getting a count. And I'm going to say something from a movie that you and I both recognize. I'm going to make the quote from Superfly. And as the brother said, she better not choke on a chicken bone, because we're going to make sure she's protected like never before. And anybody who wants to step to her, and I'm talking about my black friends now, I'm going to tell you right now, as a friend of mine posted, and it's brilliant what she posted, she said, look, if you're going to post about the past criminal justice issues you have with Biden and Harris, you will be deleted. You won't be blocked, because I think you need to learn. But you and your opinion will be dead to me until you hold every single politician and elected official to the same standard since you were eligible to vote. Otherwise, shut the F up. That's where we have to be. We don't have to be. We're at war right now. Ain't no time for no mansy-pansy. People who sit on the sidelines and always got an opinion. But like they said, when you gonna get up off your butt how many calls did you make on behalf of the Democratic Party? When was the last time you actually voted? Because a lot of these people don't go to the polls, and they got an opinion about everything. But you know what? If you ain't part of the solution, baby, you are the problem. I'll stop
right
there.
And then we're going to circle back around to that whole issue of us jumping on our own kind and always finding fault with something, usually at the wrong time or bad timing. But I know, Wayne, the legendary newsman, when you had a front row seat, being from Brooklyn, living in Brooklyn back in the day, to the wonders of the great Shirley Chisholm. So you are the man to talk about this right now, my brother Wayne Gilman.
Boy, you guys are putting age on me, but I have to agree with Byron. This is a seminal moment for all of us in the black, the brown, the green community, people of color. I've been saying this all along. I believe in the American experiment. I believe that there will be a change. I know change does not happen fast, but I am beaming with pride. You know, I called this a couple of weeks ago when you first asked me about it. And I, you know, not just because she's of Caribbean and East Indian descent, but I just really felt in my gut that she covered a lot of bases that need to be covered. And this is not to throw cold water on the other candidates that he could have picked from. They were all qualified. But when I saw her performance, because I didn't know her as a D, I never covered her, you know, she was in Los Angeles. She was in California. You know, I had heard about her, and actually, I'm a little taken back now because my first entree into understanding a little bit about her was based on criticism from an interview that was done, and I'm trying to find it, with the former San Francisco mayor, who at one time was I wouldn't say fiance, but just someone she used to date before she married who she's married to now, but an accomplished individual. And I'm feeling what Byron is saying just a moment ago, because I was a little bit dismayed, and this is why, you know, we have to be so, so careful with media, because and the fact that we're not we're watching white-owned media, because most of these networks and the cable stations are owned by whites, but they will find people who work behind the scenes in a production and try to find a balanced point of view. Not to say that we're looking to play the role. Well, actually, we are looking to play the role of advocacy here, because the opposition is so much to the right. It's just despicable. You know, there's no balance. But it bothers me sometimes when I see people who look like us, who are regarded as pundits and educated and working in some HBCU institutions as well as Ivy League colleges, and they're called upon to give an analysis of what Joe Biden picked. And then they make reference to the millennial crowd that they're teaching to and, you know, have something negative to say. We cannot afford negativity right now. You know, if he had picked Whistler's mother to do in the foolishness that we've been suffering the last 4 years, then so be it. We need to change, and we need to get out there and make sure that this thing comes down. You know, because they're coming up with all sorts of machinations. And even though, you know, it looks like the Republicans are suffering the worst nightmare by this pick, I still maintain, you know, it just bothers me. I was at a social function in Pennsylvania over the weekend, my first social function since this pandemic thing started in my brother's house, and there was an educated black woman. You know, we were sparring back and forth how she felt Trump is going to get back in. We cannot afford that, and I hope she's listening. You know, I mean, I'm not going to put her business out in the street, but she's a high school principal in Brooklyn. But it bothers me that there's still this, you know, among people who should know better, who should be well-versed in our history and hear this kind of rhetoric, you know, that we're going to capitulate. But, of course, this was done prior to the announcement that was made yesterday. And that's it. But beaming with pride.
Wayne, you make a very astute point, because I remember several years ago, 2018, being in Atlanta, Georgia, and having a conversation with my own relatives, some of who were college educated, some who were field hands. You know, that's okay, because we all got that in our family. But what I discovered was a marked depression amongst both, who felt so abused and voter suppressed that they didn't even give Stacey Abrams a chance. And then, of course, yeah, right, exactly. And it's like, wait a minute, hold on. Do you realize the power that you have in your midst? You're not a minority. When you stop thinking like a minority, you will stop feeling oppressed and suppressed.
Amen.
So
okay,
that's
right. We got to go beyond that psychological barrier, because fear is the only thing that is keeping us from stepping beyond. And
so you're saying it was.
Yes.
You're saying what they already had a defeatist attitude because of the systematic treatment that we received as African Americans. Very interesting you're saying that, and that is a prevalent feeling. And I said it. I admitted it. I didn't think that America was going to elect Barack Obama. My dad said he thought that was possible. I didn't, in the reality of thinking out, I was like, no, these white people aren't going to elect this brother, which they didn't, because we still know, like harping back to the statistic that I reiterated last week, that the Democratic Party has not taken the white vote since 1964. But it was a coalition of Americans and more the way America really is that elected Obama Biden. And to me, that's the coalition, obviously, again, that's going to come out and vote with Stacey. And that opinion that you expressed, someone had, Wayne, that was a principal and people that put the opinion out, that teaches at an HBCU. Yeah, you get everybody that has these, you know, pro-mega black, progressive opinions. You got people on either side, but you know what about the situation I learned a long time ago about particularly the presidential race is that if your person doesn't get in your first choice, then you know what, as far as you're concerned, it's the lesser two evils, ain't it? It's the lesser of two of the people that you did not originally choose. So then what you have to do is do your homework and decide, and through that homework and research, decide how much that this person, that either of these people have in common, and how many things that you guys agree upon in terms of issues affecting the country and the governing of the country. That's the choice that you have to make. Which side or which person is the person that's more in line with your values? And it has to. You have to forget about, oh, well, it's not my person, so I'm not going to vote. That's a luxury that we as African-Americans, I would suggest that everybody has, that doesn't have, but certainly we that African-Americans, and I would say, humbly suggest, if you're a person of color, then judging from the past 3 years, you don't have that option to sit out of an election either. And certainly,
please say that again. Say that again.
Well, nobody of color has an option to sit out the election. Certainly, black people don't. And I was joking with a friend of mine, because as we talked about last week, Wayne and Byron, you weren't privy to the conversation, but this buddy of mine is trying to do some sort of media campaign he wants to put together to try and get, you know, the folks out in the street to vote, everyday people who we're talking about, who have given up on the process. And I said, well, you know, to get the brothers in the street that's hustling, you got to say like this. Yeah, you're right. It's the lesser of these two white men. But think of it like this. They're two white cops. Trump is the one that's going to beat your ass and take you to the tombs for the weekend. And Joe Biden is the one that's going to listen to you and say, what you want to do? You want to go home? Give you a choice. You want to go home or you want to go to jail? And many people, that if you've seen Training Day, you're going to understand that little exchange of conversations that police officers might have with potential people that they're going to be taking to jail. But that's a real thing. That the brothers, if you do the right thing, you can go home, and the other cat is not even giving you a choice. So I mean, if you really want to look at it, then that's the choice that you have. You might not like that choice, but what you want to do? You want to go home, or you want to go to jail? And then once we get home, we could talk about all the other stuff we need to handle. But you need to get out of this like this. When stopped by a racist cop, you don't need to be mouthing off with him. What you just need to do is get out of the situation and get home. Get safe first.
Exactly.
And then we'll deal with, we'll go march, we'll go protest, we'll deal with whatever we need to deal with so you don't end up like George Floyd too. But get home, my black people.
And you know something else, Eric? The sad part about the 2016 election, it was predicated on a almost impossible situation, which was convince 1% of the black population not to vote. 1%, y'all. The swing states were 1% or less. Now, check this out. We have, for the first time, not just the history of an African-American woman, but this is validation of HBCUs and land-grant schools.
Mm.
And we all, as a race of people, owe a debt to, even if you didn't like Booker T. Washington's particular pull yourself up by your bootstraps, or you didn't like W.E.B. Du Bois' talented tip and understanding the paper bag consequences of light skin, dark skin, field hands versus house Negroes. You are going to be challenged on both ends of that this very next election. So you better bury this, because right now we need everybody in the streets, in the field, in the house, making it known that you're voting. You're going to vote. You're going to the polls, and you're going to use your power to make the change happen. For black people, this is a wake-up moment, y'all. You're not going to get this again in another century. I guarantee it. You're going to have to bury your ignorance, because the ignorance is, check this out, challenging her racial identity because she's got a father that's from Jamaica and a mother that's from East Asia, India. Now, last time I did my research in history, the Jamaicans came to the Jamaican island the same way they got to the 1619 in Virginia. And it's my last chance of checking history in India. They escaped the British colonization the same way we had to escape the Southern aristocracy. So where the hell do you get off, people, challenging somebody's ethnicity and know that the African diaspora is all black people?
And,
you know,
and
why?
She covered so many bases with that, Byron.
She does.
Not to step on you. I beam with pride because, you know, she, you know, you mentioned the HBCUs. I identify with, not of Jamaican descent, but Trinidadian, Caribbean descent, period. My mother was a Madrasi Indian. You know, this is our melting pot. And this gives us an opportunity to cover so many different bases and hopefully bring about and foster a unity like we've never had before. I mean, you know, and I've talked about this openly before, that the differences between, you know, Caribbean Americans and African Americans and some people not understanding the cultural ramifications and the different nuances in the culture, but basically there's a common thread. There's a link to everything that's in our culture that brings it full circle. And we've been oppressed, you know, we've been ostracized, and we're certainly not recognized Maybe some may be better than others, but it's still the same divide and conquer game. And once you're aware of that, that's what you need to, you know, thrive from. You know, use that as your springboard to go forward, because they want to see us divided. You know,
absolutely.
That's why he's gone out of their way to get Kanye West in Wisconsin. You know, they want to see more of this nonsense. You know, Ari Fleischer was on MSNBC a few moments ago talking about, oh, she doesn't represent the black vote. You know, like he knows, like this Republican speechwriter knows, you know, who a black person, probably first black person he met was Condoleezza Rice when George W. became president. You know, I mean,
well,
I'm done with this nonsense.
With people like that, we're not even paying attention to people like that, to be quite honest with you. We don't care what some racist white Republican says. They can say whatever they want. And this is the thing. We need to pay attention to what's going on. And I'm going to paraphrase Malcolm here. You don't catch hell in America because you're a Christian. You don't catch hell in America because you're a West Indian. You don't catch hell in America because you're from the North or the South or the East or the West, or you're from the West Indies or for wherever. You catch hell because you're black. That's why you're catching hell. And so let that
Amen.
Be a unifying factor of why we need to come together, and later for all the ways to find ways that we need to have differences amongst ourselves. Because right now, somebody said it's nation time. So it's nation time right now. And it's not only our nation, it's the United States nation. Because clearly, once again, we have to save America from itself. And I'm going to say it again. Clearly, once again, we, as in black people and other righteous people and people of color, have to save America again from itself. And we talked about earlier, you mentioned, Byron, about this is one of those shifts in history, one of those seismic shifts. And we talked about before on moving the agenda of America and the agenda of lifting the veil of and the neck, the foot of a boot of oppression off of black people. Certain times in history. Now, when Barack was elected, during the civil rights era, all these different times in history, that the mantle, the issue of our people, was moved forward. And if you date it, and if we go back from 1964, because I'm going to hop on that, because that's a new fact that's just been brought to the front of my mind, and it really kind of ticks me off a little bit that it still hasn't been the majority, that we've been in the minority of white people that have voted with the Democratic Party since 1964. But if you go back to then, that's where it kind of all started, right? I mean, even before then. But that was a time of another seismic shift forward for black people. And as I think about it, it kind of makes sense why we've been having so much hell since 1964, and it's been such a tough fight because of that very fact that the majority of the white vote is still gone with the other party that has tried to keep us from achieving those advances that we've achieved by way of the Democratic Party, which has been pushing those advances forward. No two ways about it. I know there's people that want to talk about what do we have now, what ain't nothing changed, bop, bop. Yeah, it's changed. It's changed. Ask John Lewis. Ask your mother, your father, your grandfather. Ask them about what's changed. So when people say that and start that old, you know, ain't nothing changed, she ain't going to do nothing, we don't got time for that. We don't got time for that because we know people that have actually died for your right to vote. And if when you come and get into this black skin and you realize, yeah, like we said last week and the week before last, yeah, my life's mission might be to fight and overcome this oppression of my people. The jobs that each of us had, Wayne as a newsman at a black radio station, that was the job of you as a black man. This job became available, so the job was to report the issues that were important to my people. Byron telling the history that is important to our people, us trying to be performers and entertainers and represent our people in a proud way and not doing some of the nonsense and the buffoonery that they made available or make available to some of us who would do anything, and this is across the board, for money, for status, for personal advancement. Not only in the entertainment business, it falls in politics, business, everywhere across the board, we've always had those individuals that go in against the flow or that are going for themselves. That would be approximately, to me, probably the 10 or 8% of black people that are voting with the Republican Party, individuals who go against the flow. And I'm sure every community has them. It's not unique to us. But This is, I guess, I'm. This is a word to the wise, or a shout out to all them people that were sitting around Herman Cain at that Republican rally when they should have been home honoring the death and the contribution of slaves being set free on that weekend. A record,
and, you know,
like Kamala said today.
The sad part about even then, they were all sitting in the black section. Can you
right.
imagine that? Come on.
So the camera shot would show, yes, we have a bunch of black supporters, so let's all group all 35 of them in one section.
Yeah, exactly. And see, and that's the point at which, come on now, let your visual optics tell you what truth is. Wake up. Smell the roses, because you're standing in a pile of dung. And that's why you're stuck, because you have your fertilizer has grabbed you and pulled you back down to the ground, so you can't even move. You can't even think. And now you got a virus that, as I've been reading medically, that the effects on the brain could be damaging for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. And they've turned
speaking
away from truth, right? They've turned
right,
away from truth at every...
Away. Exactly, because the thing is, when you go back in, once again, you know, I've been given the death clock. We're up over 5.25 million people infected.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. And it's blowing up even bigger because we don't have a national policy that even tells you mandate to wear a mask. Now, how difficult can it really be to just wear a mask?
And they've turned away from the truth, right? They've decided to turn their back on the truth in hopes of their hatred and this belief system based upon hatred comes true. They would even – it kind of reminds me in a really even more of a simplistic way as I'm thinking about it, how the Negro League, Negro Baseball League, right, they had – the brothers had to have their own league because the segregation wouldn't allow the brothers to play and us to play in sports with them. And no matter what, they tried to turn their back on the accomplishments of these outstanding brothers, and they couldn't – got to the point where they could no longer deny the accomplishments. That's why what's the main thing that they wanted – that they're saying about getting America back to normal? What's one of the main driving forces? Start our sports again. Start our sports again.
And
I'm thinking about, you know where I'm going, with the Big 12 deciding to go forth with their season. Because why? It's $5 billion worth of business in college sports. But who are the wheels? Who's the chinks in the armor that's running that engine to allow them, black men, young black men,
that's
playing
right.
college football,
thank
putting
you.
Their
that's
bodies
right.
and
and
lives on the line.
Paid,
and,
they're not
exactly.
getting paid a single penny from that $7 billion television contract. That's the only reason why they're pushing that. They're
exactly.
putting us in front. They're using us as a shield and as guinea pigs, and this is a white supremacist in ideology. Make no mistake about it. What we're about to see unleashed, we have not seen racism unleashed in this nation like we're about to see since 12 Years a Slave. That was the moment. Think about it. Washington, D.C., he got picked up, right, because he got picked up off of the streets of Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, as a free man by some bounty hunters who forced him into slavery.
Mm-hmm.
He was a free man.
Let's talk about bounty hunters. I mean, since you got on that subject real quick, and since I'm drawing a segue here, bounty hunters, police, patty rollers,
mm-hmm.
prosecutor,
mm-hmm.
Kamala is that
mm-hmm.
person. And I'm not talking about Kamala has any connection with that. I'm really drawing a reference to probably her stance on law enforcement and how it needs to be revamped, reimagined, because the history of law, at least this particular type of policing in this country has a negative history of oppression. It grew out of oppression, right? So we need to rethink law and order in our country. We need to think keeping the peace in our country. And so when these guys hear about defund the police, I don't think you should defund the police either. I think we need to rethink law and order and the policing system in our country. But that's their power base, right? That's their racist power brace. That's why they have all the unions and everything. That's how, and like I think we said it before, their military end to affect keeping us under control and keeping us oppressed on the streets in the day-to-day, in the day-to-day interactions with us. So
and
once
Eric,
we
that
go ahead.
Your notion is based in why they hated Obama so much is because
mm-hmm.
he proposed reducing the defense budget to pay for the infrastructure of the United States. That pissed off every one of them southern states because they all got government contracts with the defense
in their
department
states
to build the war machinery. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And just to piggyback on that, Byron, I think the one thing that just disturbs me, they were upset even though the infrastructure in those states are weathering a very bad storm. Every time there's a problem, you know, I mean,
yeah.
how often do you have to go to FEMA to rebuild? You
yeah,
know, I mean, it's just one of those things.
Yeah, how much more water has to rain before you realize why don't we have an aqueduct system commensurate to the one that Rome built for its system where they needed the water to help grow their crops and that we got rain everywhere in the United States.
Thank you.
Flooding from and can't find enough water to
right.
sustain the crops, but we can build a pipeline from the Gulf all the way up to Connecticut, pumping gas.
And beyond.
That's right.
And beyond.
So, I mean, at some point, we are talking about a failure of leadership that is a pandemic because we are not going to get up off the mat on this unless we flush the turds on November 3rd.
That's right. That's right.
I hope that's patented, brother.
Well, if it's not, I don't mind. I'm not getting no. Well, ain't nobody gonna get money off of that. But you
no,
know what?
I understand.
What we, will, what we will get, what we will be able to achieve, is to have the understanding that yesterday's blessing in that announcement did more for our community than any stimulus money that they could put into our pockets. Because
they said that
we were depressed.
Yeah.
Think about it. The moments that have stopped the global community have been the deaths of African American men, women, and children.
Well, it certainly affected the economy. You know, obviously the president is talking about his tweet to the suburban housewives and not wanting low income people to invade the neighborhoods. To low income
We're
people
already
to
there.
Invade. The neighborhoods, and which is the crazy thing about it is we know the image he's trying to draw, obviously, the dog whistle, not even a dog whistle, the clear, just saying it out loud, that he's trying to draw. But, you know, when I was thinking about, the low-income perspective, it's a mentality, right? It's not an individual. It's a mentality that someone might have a low-income mentality. And I thought about what would be the things. You know, I'm doing character breakdown, Byron. You know, I'm doing what would be the things
yeah.
that would cause me to be a low-income individual. Well, I might not be able to have access to a job. I might not be able to have access to employment to support myself and my family. I might not be able to have access to live in a community where I can go to a decent school. I might not have access to live in a community where I can access decent food and medical help. That might make me a person who isn't a low-income person. So I might do things that a low-income person would do to get these resources. And sometimes it might be by any means necessary. So if you want to talk about a low-income people and you present a mentality, how about we make it so every American has an opportunity to come up in this country and not have to be in a low-income environment, if you want to stigmatize that. Isn't that a reflection on the country overall? I mean, everything to me is about context. So why does someone end up that way? What are we doing in our community that we have supposedly the greatest country in the world, the wealthiest country in the world? Why do we have homeless people? Why do we have people that are starving? Why do we have so-called low-income individuals that you people are talking so badly about? And then you want to talk about they don't want to work, and then in one of the worst circumstances to hit our country in a century, they don't want to do what's necessary to help the average citizen, thus creating more low-income individuals who, guess what, this time a lot of them might not be black. So what are you talking about when you say that? But I realize I'm talking like way up, that's kind of, you know, 12th grade level stuff, and a lot of the people are maybe that's first year of college, so a lot of the people that the other side is talking to, I don't want to give, you know, asparagus on their aspersions,
asparagus,
so to speak. But,
I like the asparagus.
You know, it might pay to get a little bit more educated so you can make better decisions. That's all I'm saying. So you don't end up being one of them low-income individuals, I guess, that this guy is trying to insinuate about. But it's just interesting to me when they, you know, and I know that that's people, we're trying to appeal to people on a level that they are not even prepared to receive information on. But there's those of us on our side that we need to educate and bring up to speed and have them understand what's really at stake, what's really at stake. And the mantle might not, and the ball might not be moved quick enough down the field that a lot of people want, and I know that they don't want. But that's what it is. And you, if you can imagine those that came before us that had a lot less to work with than we did, if they can do it, that means we can do it, right?
Amen. Yes, sir.
All right,
So we have met the pivotal moment. And the energy levels just got a boost. I imagine the bump between now and the convention next week should be anywhere between 8 and 10 points. And if that's the case, they may see the next 40 days as an agenda to really let the tsunami out the gate. Because I'm telling you, there's no way in hell that his base is 40%. No way possible. That's three card money game. All right.
If I might, I'd like to throw this out to both of you. I know that they're coming up with a plethora of machinations to suppress the vote, to stop the vote. You know, they're going to send the military to the polling stations, and you know, and things like that. What can we do, I mean, talk about, because I know some members of the Democratic coalition who are members of Congress are working on what happens if there is a surprise October beyond what we already know. But what is it that you think that can be said and done to just basically instill confidence amongst our people, those who will support this ticket, to see to it that things are realized on the November 3rd. You follow? Has anybody sat down? I mean, because this is going to be so highly unusual. It's not like as if you could fundraise. Everything is going to be about Zooming and all that. And sometimes things get lost in the sauce. And I was just wondering, is there any conversation going on amongst your friends, family, and your political connections, Eric?
Yeah, I haven't spoken to the congressman. I invited him to see if he had time to call in to talk about that type of strategy. I know in certain circumstances, I saw one that they were encouraging, Mr. Clyburn was encouraging people to vote. You know, some states are able to start voting like a month ahead of time, right? So that's what he's encouraging people to do, that when you can start, don't wait. Election day is actually the 4th, but you can start voting already. Some states are allowing that. So I think that would be, you know, as we try to help people understand what they can do if they're listening to us, I would say to check out the process and what's needed to be done and do it early, you know, and make sure it's done early and stay on top of that. And also, too, I think in our very digital age and having our devices in our hands might work to our favor in terms of that people can really tune in at a drop of a hat, you know. And they always could last a couple of years, but I got a feeling that being that this convention is going to be completely done on Zoom, there's going to be more of an emphasis for people to obviously be able to watch it, right? And so those platforms are going to be made a lot more available to a broader cross-section of people to be able to tune in, even if they're sitting somewhere in the park and they could tune in on their cell phone, which I think is going to cause the party to be more, you know, digitally savvy.
They're going to have to control the message. They're going to have to control the media input, as they are doing right now. Because I can tell you, even though I know Washington is in is in that space and place where our message is pretty much an attack message against the GOP, it's still the rationale of naming the VP yesterday is, as I think, what we will see at the convention is not only the rally of the voters, but in controlling the message and controlling the media, because that's the savviness of the charlatan. He thinks he is the control of the media message through his right-wing supports media moguls, Sinclair, Rupert Murdoch, all the media outlets, so even Bloomberg. See, Bloomberg is in that Midwestern area where his cable is. That's where he makes a lot of his money, is from the cable industry in the Midwest. So, but for the Democrats, come next week, there's no reason to wait to name your cabinet. Name it now. Get these very qualified persons to be because what we have to do is show the malfeasance of the current administration and the people he has put into place, and then put in front of the American people who's going to be their replacement.
The new Marvel political superheroes, what you're saying. I like
that idea.
Yeah. Right. And then like the whole, like that idea. That's a good marketing ploy, too.
Very qualified. I mean, extremely qualified. When you put them up against Mnuchin.
Very nice, diverse cross-section.
Bloomberg is going to be the Secretary Treasurer. You put them up against Carson. You put them up against DeVos. These people are the most incompetent people ever running government in the United States.
Right.
It's time
right.
to clean that house out completely.
The guy controlling
those persons right now, telling you, because you got to control the media. You're going to have to control the message. And we have the message on our side right now.
Yeah, we need
They're
to have
so
a whole
confused
department.
In the GOP. Yeah, he doesn't even know if he's going to give his acceptance speech at Gettysburg. How many people died in Gettysburg?
Yeah, they,
or
they,
the
they,
White House?
I mean,
really?
You know, that's the fortunate thing, that as much as surrogates and all they try to do, the more he talks, the better it is for us. And we need to, and you know, we've been talking about this, but in terms of the whole Democratic, you know, war room and assessment, there needs to be, like you said, a whole division that's controlling the narrative, that is clapping back to any crazy stuff, just like their job, this your platoon's division, narrative.
Right.
And every time you hear some of this nutty stuff, they clap back 10 times harder with facts over and over again.
So,
like I said, we don't toot our own horn. We constantly want to be the good guy, you know, with the traditional good guy in the story. Don't toot his whole horn or humble. No. We're getting Cassius Clay. We're getting Muhammad Ali out this cat. You know what I'm saying? We're talking about, yes, we are the better party, the greatest party of all time. Say it, because they'll say it. Why not? And then and then challenge somebody to prove us. Look at our actions. Are we wrong? Compare us to this guy. I mean, one of the main campaign things is like put a mask on. Just have a still with somebody with a family with masks and a still with family with no masks. This is Trump's America. This is Trump before America. This is America before Trump. We're walking around wearing masks on our face. We're walking around taking our kids to school to potentially expose themselves to a lethal disease. And this guy and his cronies are keeping it making it possible for these kids to go to school and get sick. Go ahead.
So I was just going to give you the historic update. How many people were killed at Gettysburg? There were 23,000 that Union soldiers were killed, over 28,000 Confederate soldiers killed, for a total of 51,000. Now, you're going to go down there and give a speech to a place that you lost the war? What kind of fool and idiot does that?
Someone who doesn't know the history, who just talks out of his you-know-what.
There you go. Exactly. And, if the Democrats are smart, as I'm sure that they will be, let him give his speech from Gettysburg, because at that point, Biden or Kamala will remind America that we lost 50-some thousand people in one battle.
That's right.
One battle.
Well, I think the biggest battle is the one we're going through right now with 165,000 dead.
I wish they
would show footage of all these little ICE trucks that were lining the streets of Manhattan. You know, to me, that is the greatest commercial to show the impact of what this man's ignorance has led this country to. You know, going back a couple of months when New York was at the center of this crisis, you know?
What's the issue is that it's sad, but that's the reality of it. You know, that's Byron knows this term as I do. When we take a plane, put it on its feet, let's make it real. Let's walk. Let's go through the motion, the reality of living this life. So what you're talking about, Wayne, is being on the streets of Manhattan and walking down and seeing these ICE trucks that have dead bodies. You know, a lot of these people, when they hear about the virus, it ain't real to them. You know, that's why a lot of these Midwest people over there, they didn't, because it wasn't real to them. They didn't know anybody. Like they said, I don't know anybody. One of their things, right, was, do you know anybody that died of corona? And if they didn't, it wasn't real to them. That's a lack of empathy. And certainly when they heard the statistic that the majority of people dying were black and brown people, as if it was just a black and brown disease, it was like, no, because they're on the front line making your society and your community work. That's why you have so many black people in the federal government, because when the federal government decided you couldn't have, it was illegal to have the discrimination in hiring, the federal government was the first agency that had to live up to that. And the black people went to the federal government jobs and got these jobs. That's why we're working at the post office and places that's like that. That's why the Republicans wanted to cut back on federal jobs. If you understand their whole thing. So, you know, when you understand all these things in place, then you got to play the game. You got to play, you know, you got to play chess. You got to play the checkmate, what they're doing out here, you know?
Exactly.
I got kind of sidetracked and off my point there, but you guys know where we're going, what we're talking about. Hey, last couple of minutes, I want to talk about Shirley Chisholm real quick, Wayne, and being that you grew up in Brooklyn, I know you were at least alive when Shirley Chisholm was alive, because I was alive
one of my first events. I mean, the very first very first news event that I covered was the passing and the funeral of the late, great Adam Clayton Powell at Abyssinian Baptist Church in Harlem. But in that same year, in 72, Shirley Chisholm was making history, my Caribbean sister from Barbados, actually born in Brooklyn, but grew up in Barbados. A lot of people get that confused. But was making history of her own. Very articulate. Someone who probably would have been the Kamala Harris of her day if the opportunities were there. But she's the one who laid the mold. You know, again, I don't want to sound territorial, but I'm just beaming with pride because I know what my parents went through and what people from my side of the street have gone through just to fit into this experiment here. And when you mentioned the post office, my dad was turned down at RCA because he knew electronics coming to this country. Father took care of five children, 45 years in the PO in Brooklyn, you know?
Wow.
So, I mean, all these things are like little, posts road posts, you know, that we're historically going through. And I when I think of Shirley Chisholm, you know, she was outspoken, articulate, and she would give members of the congressional delegation at that particular time, hell, you know, and we're talking coming out of the Voting Rights Act. It just passed like 6 years before she announced. She was already in Congress. I forgot what year she started. I want to say 68, 69. But the deal is she was established, and that community, which is now partially represented by Yvette Clark, you know, has changed a great deal. But, you know, she was certainly someone who played a pivotal role in the development. You know, it bothered me to see Sarah Palin the other day take credit once it was announced that Kamala Harris, you know, people have no concept of history, you know, when it comes to being the first this, the first that. She was praising, not to cut you off, Biden's selection, but she made it sound like as if, well, we and God, my memory is failing me, but the Queens Congress member who ran a few years ago, Democrat, Forest Hills. Yeah, Ferraro. Yeah, you know. So she said that we paved the way for a Kamala Harris to be there. Already, the duplicitous nature of how these people think, you know, like as if there was no one before that.
Well, I mean, we don't expect them. That's what we expect. Certainly, I expect that from her, someone who had a problem naming what newspaper she read. So we know that it's like I was saying before. I don't, you know, for me,
no,
I got to
ask.
Reason personally, I got to get brought up to speed about what these people say is because as soon as I hear who's the sources, I'm not paying. I pay it no mind. I might listen to the statement, but I know it's BS because A, they're liars. Or B, like you're pointing out, they're ignorant of history. And C, they're just general ignorant people. I mean, you know, God bless Alaska. I don't know how stiff the competition was to become governor of that state. I know that Murkowski seems to be a good representative, even though she's a Republican. She seems to stand on her own every once in a while. But, you know, I don't, you know, Sarah Palin saying something is like, okay. Great, Sarah Palin said something. We haven't even heard of her in these years. And so, you know, the ignorance of them is not lost on me. You know, Mrs. Shirley Chisholm was also a school teacher, was she not? I know some people
she was an educator.
In Jersey that she was a teacher of theirs, as a gentleman that had a fairly successful business over here for a short time, Mr. James Felton. They had a family business, and he grew up in Brooklyn, and Mrs. Chisholm was one of his teachers, elementary school teachers. And so I don't know, and maybe Byron, if you can answer this, or maybe you know, Wayne, was she the first African-American to declare their run for president?
Woman.
She was.
Yeah.
And the first African-American woman in the halls of Congress, to my knowledge. Then came Barbara Jordan and you know, all those who followed. You know, and Byron, you're the historian here. You know, sometimes my memory fails me, but I believe that she was the first.
Yeah, because you did, after her, you had independent candidates who were, you know, running on the independent ticket or the, you know, I mean, even, what's her name, McKinney. She put her hat into the ring at one point, but that was way after Shirley Chisholm, okay?
Well, McKinney was modern day. I mean, she's within the last 10, 15 years, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Well, at least, when was that, 70, let's see, it had to be about 72. That was McGovern, wasn't it? I think it was back at. I have to go back in my history. That you know, now you're challenging my senior citizen moment here.
That's okay. We're about at it right now. At about 90 seconds, gentlemen. So we're gonna pick it up again. We'll be doing this, another episode probably Friday or Saturday at the latest, because we're gonna stay on Trump watch and stay on Kamala, Joe and Kamala watch. We're gonna be pushing it forward. So. Tell somebody to vote. Gentlemen, Byron, you want to give the people your sign off?
Absolutely. Peace and love always, my friends. And remember this, you are not a minority. Start acting like the majority and use your power to make change a reality. Vote.
There it is, Brother Byron Sullivan. Talk to you again.
Yes, sir.
All right, brother. Wayne Gilman, tell the people how you feel about
it. I just want to say, as I usually say, you know, keep hope alive. I mean, I am so proud of what's happened and what Joe Biden was able to do yesterday. It was a defining moment in my life.
Yeah, all right, Brother Wayne Gilman. We're going to dig more into it as we do our next upcoming episodes about that. Wayne, we'll talk to you again in a couple of days, my brother.
Okay.
All right. This has been Kay's Son and Friends, and I know my mom is somewhere very but there you go. There's Chuck for you. That's Chuck D in the background. Fear of a black planet. Some people might be sweating. We're going to have a righteous planet for all peoples. I'm Citizen Payne. A lot of you know me as Eric Payne. This is Kay's Son and Friends. My mom is up in heaven on assignment celebrating. We'll talk to you again soon. Love you, Ma.